As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This team, man. This freaking team. Just embarrassing. Let's get into it. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, part of the Athletics Podcast Network. How you doing, Rich?
Derek, I'm doing fine. I know a lot of people are hurting out there right now, and let's get into it.
You know what? We were going to do a podcast yesterday. You reached out. You said, Derek, I want to do a podcast right now. I said, no, Rich, why don't you back off, take at least more than a day off to start your off season. We don't want you getting burned out.
That's funny because you sent that tweet out yesterday, just I think of Doc praising Tyrese Maxey's work ethic, which it's kind of along the lines of things he said this year, where they have these things, I think they call them blackout days or something like that, or black curtain days, something where Tyrese Maxey, don't leave your house. You're not allowed to work out because our sports science department says you've been playing too much, basically. That is what Doc was saying, but every Doc tweet right now is a bomb, man. You put that out into the ether and people are going to react.
The quote that I was referencing here, Doc Rivers says, he basically said that Tyrese Maxey tried to meet with him yesterday, the day after the season ended, to go over what to work on next week. And Doc said, I refuse to meet with him today because I think he should be taking more than a week off. That's what I was referencing there to start. I sent that out, and honestly, I sent it out just thinking, like, that's Doc praising Tyrese Maxey's work ethic. That's all it was, and Twitter blew up, which I get because right now everyone is on high alert. There's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of anger. Get all of that. But that was just the joke I was making to start the podcast, because quite frankly, after watching what we just watched here in the last two games, a couple of jokes here and there are necessary, I will say.
Well, let's add one more joke too, because, I mean, let's be real. This is all going to be sadness. Paul Reed, when he was laying out his goals, saying that I'm a terrible leaper, I got to add 10 to 15 inches to my vertical is, I mean, that honestly...
Which, by the way, I went back and I looked up his vertical at his combine. 37 and a half inches. If he adds 15 inches, he would be the greatest leaping big man of all time.
All time.
10 to 15 inches is not a reasonable goal over an offseason, over the course of a...
career.
Yeah, course of a life. To add to a vertical leap, but aim high. Literally aim high in this case. Paul Reed. Love that dude.
That was hilarious.
One thing that did not age well, our last podcast, which were released after game four, in which we were very optimistic about this team's chances here against the Heat, maybe a little less so in the next round if they made it. But they came out with games five and six, which were two of the worst efforts in a high-stakes game I have legitimately ever seen from this franchise. And to be clear, like, we were both in attendance for game seven last year against the Hawks. Like, we are not strangers to very, very disappointing efforts. But for them to come out there and follow up, what did they lose game five by? 35 points? Something of that sort? I can't do math in my head at this
35,
point.
35, yeah.
I think. It was a lot. It was a fucking lot. to come out there with that effort in the second half was just mind-blowing. And the one image I will not get out, and it took me a little while to actually watch this game, had some complications getting there, yada, yada, yada. I didn't actually watch the full game until 24 hours after it happened, which, let me tell you, that was a fun watch when you know what's going to happen. The one image that will not get out of my head is that floorboard that Jimmy Butler got midway through the fourth quarter when they were up by like 17 or whatever, and Tobias Harris and James Harden just watched the ball bounce on the floor, made no effort to box him out. Jimmy Butler comes swooping in from like the foul line and gets a freaking offensive rebound off the floor in the corner. They got crushed in every which way. Not only did they not know how to attack Miami's fronting defense or their zone defense or their... Even when Miami went to a more traditional pick-and-roll defense, they had no real game plan to attack it. But they got beaten every hustle category consistently here over the last two games, to the point where I think they even lost the free-throw battle to Miami throughout the series. It was a pathetic... And I really... like
Dirk, they shot six free throws the other night.
I know.
Six free throws.
I know.
And nobody complained about the refs afterwards. They shot six free throws.
They had a 21.7% free throw rate over the course of a series. And look, Joel Embiid, you know, he was the Black Knight in Monty Python by the end of it. Like, he had nothing.
Sorry, seven free throws. Sorry.
It doesn't matter.
Apologize.
If there's one person I'm going to give a pass to, I understand why he was not playing up to his normal level. But this was a team who, like, getting to the free throw line was supposed to be a way that they overcame their other deficiencies. And they didn't get there, not because they didn't get a whistle. They didn't get there for any other reason, then they just stopped attacking. And it was just pathetic. And I really hate using words like that because, especially now that we're 2 days removed from it, like, you would think that we would have more to offer. It almost sounds like we're going back into like sports radio tropes, but that was a pathetic, pathetic effort.
It's a great way you just put that. There's no way to get around that they got outworked. They got out hustled. Miami,
like,
wanted
a quarter,
Miami wanted to
or
be
a
there
half
more.
Or a game. Like, they got out hustled for eight straight quarters.
Miami just broke their spirit in a way that was, on the one hand, super impressive by them, considering, you know, we talked about the pod we did after Embiid came back when the Sixers were right back in the series. So for them to flip the switch and just when it turns out to be winning time, they just wanted it more. But yeah, I mean, look, like, last year, we were freaking out because that was worthy of a freak out because the Sixers lost to a worse team than them because they did stupid stuff and they shrank from the moment, all of those things. I think Miami was a better team. So in one way, and Embiid was hurt, obviously, like you said, missed two games. And, you know, by the end of it was not the Joel Embiid that you would need to beat the Miami Heat. But this was disgusting, man. Like, the way they went out, you can't go out that way. You can't treat a playoff elimination game like it's February against the Orlando Magic. You know, it's just, for you to lose that way, it's go out firing. And it really was disgusting. I mean, you talk about the Jimmy board. I'll just say, like, P.J. Tucker running by Harden four or five times in the second half for rebounds. And, look, I guess we're bearing the lead, I guess, a little bit here. It's not the first time he's done it in his career. I think a lot of people would let you know about that. I think a lot of people were talking about it on Twitter after the game. That was absolutely disgusting from James Harden.
Disgusting.
Brutal. Like,
So
you forced a trade here. This is an elimination game.
Yeah.
You just got killed the game before, and you are like 1-2-3 Cancun. I don't want to play. Horrible. And it's, again, you're so right about, I don't want to make this sports radio tropes. I don't want to make this. You got out toughed. You got out hustled. No, that's what happened.
Yeah, no,
they cared more than you. And everybody on your team after the game was over
Said it. Yes.
And by the way, they say it in like a general version of, oh, we need to get tougher as a team. No, they mean, it's like, I'm looking at Joel Embiid, like, even I got the Black Knight reference from Monty Python. Even I got that one. it's not that he's not tough enough. We all know that. I think Tyrese Maxey needs to improve and needs to become more consistent. I'm not questioning that dude's toughness and that dude's effort. So who are we talking about? Like, yeah, I guess maybe Tobias a little bit, but...
I mean, it's to be honest to me, so there's a couple
ways... Let me finish it, though. Sure. They're talking about James Harden. That's who they're talking about. That's the guy who needs to be tougher. And for somebody who has had so many of those bad performances throughout his career, dude, shoot 6 of 24 from the field. Do that. Seriously. You were giving the ball to Shake Milton in the second half and saying, Shake, you got this. Like, I am too afraid. I'm too checked out to run offense. I don't know what to do with that. That is, it was disgusting to watch. Sorry.
I mean, look, I think outside, once you get past Joel Embiid, there's a lack of toughness pretty much up and down the roster. And sometimes I'm talking about mental toughness. Sometimes I'm talking about physical toughness. Like Tyrese Maxey, I think, is mentally tough, but he's physically frail.
Yeah.
Everyone outside of Joel Embiid and maybe Shake Milton, like I'll give Shake a little bit of credit, especially for the way he showed up there in the final two games, really the only one to show up. But
Shake's
nobody
got that dog in him.
He's got a little bit of dog. Nobody else on the team does, though, outside of Joel Embiid. And watching, you know, I thought game five when Miami just physically manhandled the Sixers, watching that, when you realize, well, Joel Embiid's not up to his typical standards, then you look at everyone around him and there's just not that combination of mental and physical toughness really on many players on this. You go to George Niang and his rebounding, James Harden and what you saw there in game six. There's just not a whole lot to fall back on in that regard. And it becomes really pronounced when Joel Embiid's not his normal self, and you're playing against one of the physically tougher teams in the NBA, and they just got whooped. And to have them come out there and to a person say, we have to work on our mental toughness. I'm not 100% sure how like 28 and 30-year-olds work on their mental toughness. It feels like something that you either have or you don't at this stage of their career, which is really, if you're a Sixers fan, unsettled hearing that. I get it. It was funny. We're hearing everyone talk about mental toughness throughout the post-game press conferences in Game 6 and then the exit interviews. And we're going, yeah, we get it. We all watch the same series. Like, at least they're not completely oblivious to the fact. But also, well, how am I supposed to have confidence in this group of players figuring it out in future years? And I don't even know where I want to go. There's so many things to touch on. So I
can't believe Harden. It's unbelievable. Ben Simmons, that was a disaster last year. And we spent a lot of words and a lot of angst after the season was over about what a pathetic playoff performance he put forth. I think that dude has some serious anxiety issues, though.
No, I mean, look, there's a way that this is a lot more understandable from Simmons' perspective, especially the farther we get removed from it, whereas what we just saw is just infuriating. And you brought up a good point. Like, last year was so tough because the Sixers were the favored team. Whereas it feels like a lot of what happened this year was almost what you would have expected to happen. Like, if you go back at the time of the trade and listen to our podcast, even after the trade, I said, well, the Sixers probably only have like a single-digit percent chance of winning a championship. And it would go through all kinds of reasons, from familiarity with Embiid and Harden to lack of depth. There's just reasons why this might not be the year. And then you come into the playoff series. I think you picked Heat in five. I picked Heat in six. So losing the series was, again, sort of part of the plan. Like, we expected this to happen, but the way that it came about is just a combination of infuriating and also terrifying when you project going forward. You know, part of the reason that, first of all, there's just the getting outworked aspect to it, and I don't know how you fix that with this collection of players. And by the way, changing the players is starting to become increasingly more and more difficult, especially if you give Harden a new contract, and sure as hell we'll get into that contract, not in this podcast because I feel like we have a lot to get to, but certainly over the next couple of weeks. And you talk about Tobias Harris's contract, you talk about the lack of draft picks. It's becoming tougher and tougher to reshuffle this roster. And so if you have that lack of toughness, mental and physical, oh boy, that's a big problem. But also there's the fact that part of the reason you have so little depth is because you waited to use all of your resources until you were able to get that running mate for Embiid, because you gave up some of your depth in that trade for Harden. And you're sitting at here now, part of what you were banking on. All right, maybe they're not ready yet this year, but you have a core, you have a foundation so that in future years, you know what to add to. You have that base. You're left with more uncertainty about that base than you've ever had. And you're looking at James Harden and you're saying, that's the guy who's supposed to be the championship level running mate? That guy who wasn't even... And There's so much. I'm just so frustrated with this team. And there's a part, like, look, it's one thing for all of his deficiencies and all of his weaknesses when he was an offense unto himself. Like, all right, you don't want to move off ball? Fine. You want to dribble between your legs 15 times and run out the shot clock? Fine. You want to not give effort on defense or on the boards? Okay. You're the most dynamic, unstoppable offense in the league.
He's giving you 30-plus points on 60-plus right. true shooting. Hey, come on. I'll take that.
If he's going to get to the point where he can't get past Isaiah, Ike Stewart, if he's going to completely check out of game six in the playoffs, all of those deficiencies, including taking care of his body, become magnified to the point where they become really, really terrifying. And this is a guy now who has to adjust his game, who has to, you know, you're talking about coming back from that hamstring and take care of his body in a way that he never really has before, who has to grow and become an off-ball player and rededicate himself to moving off-ball and becoming a better team defender. And I don't know why you would have confidence in him changing who he is as both a preparer and a player when he hasn't shown that in a decade plus. It's just there's so much uncertainty with this team, and that's what the James Harden trade, even if you weren't in a position to contend this year, the James Harden trade was supposed to give you certainty going forward, and I feel like we're as uncertain as we've ever been.
Yep, it's a major question moving forward, but just for today, we cannot emphasize enough his lack of competitiveness in that game is just disgusting. And two games in a row where, you know, you have that sequence at the beginning of the fourth quarter, they take Embiid off the court. And by the way, the fact that Embiid, as far as we know, and by the way, this is classic knock on wood because there's always something with the Sixers. As far as we know, he made it out unscathed compared to what he already was dealing with. That his eye is okay. His thumb will get surgery. It's what he said after the game. Eye's not going to need surgery. Thumb is. The fact that he's not any more injured or anything like that would be a massive win for the Sixers. Because that dude, it's such a bummer that his season ends with him just playing a terrible game because he's like concussed, man. Because he was, I mean, he shouldn't have been playing, but that dude is such a warrior. And you know what? He said it after game five in Miami that it's a lose-lose, that people will criticize him when he's not playing well, or they'll criticize him for not playing because he's hurt. I really hope, and I think he knows this, nobody is criticizing him. Like, he's not catching any of that, and deservedly so.
I mean,
that dude, I feel,
look, I'm not going to call him out, but I've definitely heard some, you will never win with Joel Embiid because he's always injured. Trade him now takes. I've seen that from various members of the media. I would say it's out there. Not from the majority of the fan base, but it's occasional.
Okay. Well, yeah, you're right. You can't get unanimity on a single take unless you win a championship. But I really think a lot of people appreciated what Joel did and playing. And I guess it just kind of sucked for him that it kind of hit him after two games. He, you know, he came back and, yeah, he wasn't himself in the first two games, but his presence was, it was transformational. It completely shifted the series for a couple games. And then, yeah, he just did not have it offensively. He could not be the singular offensive force that he has been. And you compare that to Harden and the possession at the beginning of the fourth quarter, because they take Embiid out because he's gassed like I've almost never seen him be gassed. And Maxey tries to throw Harden the ball. By the way, this was Maxey's fault. I don't know why. He kind of threw a lazy pass to Harden at half court, and Oladipo steals it. They both have their hands up like, what the fuck, man? But their body language in that moment is poisonous.
Yeah. Yep.
Those two are looking at each other where they're just completely frustrated. Next possession, Harden gets Oladipo on an island, and he can't beat him twice, and he turns the ball over, like, dribbling between his back on a no-hope play, and there's just, I mean, it's really sad. Miami runs down, and they get an alley-oop. It's really sad. And, you know, we'll talk about his lack of burst, because that's a huge part of this. That's a huge part of the next contract. But again, I just come back to the point that James Harden, after basically forcing a trade this year, he wanted to be in Philadelphia after, you know, a lot of really rough playoff exits, you know, a chance to change the narrative, a chance to at least win this series. He quit. He quit. And it's more than any of that, that is what scares me moving forward. This guy quit in the biggest game of the season. And I don't know how you approach that moving forward.
If you can't beat this version of Victor Oladipo off the dribble, you have to do the little things. And James Harden's forgotten what the little things were a decade ago. It's really tough to watch. And look, this is a bad team for him. So a tough matchup for him. But like the playoffs, you don't get the Knicks in the playoffs. Like, you're going to always have bad matchups.
To win a title, you're probably going to have to win some bad matchups. Yeah. The good teams, they play in the final rounds of the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, no, that's how that
news,
works. That's
news
how that
at works. 11, James Harden.
And look, I have liked to have seen what it looks like, because I still think his style of play and his skills can help make Joel Embiid better. And we'll debate how much that's worth here when we talk about the next contract. But is it enough to beat the Bucks? And we'll never know, because Joel Embiid wasn't remotely himself after that elbow, but that's terrifying. It's terrifying.
Look, it's terrifying. And if I guess I'm not quite as down on it in general, like if Harden could just get a little healthier, I think what Maxey has done this year has really made me a believer in him. Yeah. And I think it's just a huge thing for this team. And look, their depth was horrible, by the way, too. And we're also talking about the fact that Danny Green is not going to be available.
Oh, and honestly, we should have mentioned that way earlier. For him to blow out the way he did, both his ACL and his NCL, in a way that just looked like it was a devastating amount of pain.
Did you say NCL?
No, I said LCL. ACL and LCL. Or at least that's what I meant to say.
I think he like said N, and then you did the NCL. There's no NCL, I'm just saying.
No, I think I was saying end, and it maybe... Who fucking cares? We're a podcasters. You can't expect me to be able to speak coherently. It was devastating to see. It was devastating to see him the day after in crutches. It was honestly devastating to hear him say, like, hey, I'm optimistic. I think it may have avoided major ligament damage. It might just be the LCL. And then like an hour later, we find out that it's both. For a guy who's 35, has a non-guaranteed contract, or will be 35 here in a couple of weeks, has a non-guaranteed contract and is at the tail end of his career. Like, not that you ever want to see any major knee injury, but that's a devastating piece of news in the final game of the season. It's just brutal.
Brutal. And by the way, that's part of the other reason they lost that game, because Danny Green got hurt 3 minutes into the game. And the Sixers, by the end of this, they had five guys you could actually trust in a playoff series.
Yeah.
Five. And he was one of them. So... And, you know, you play Thibault at the beginning of the second half of that game, and it's ridiculous because he can't play offense. You can't play Niang because he can't play defense. So you're... And by the way, Niang, his plus-minus throughout the series is
amazing.
He made
six shots all series, and he has, like, the team-leading plus-minus.
It's the all-time... You can't just use plus-minus in single games and net rating because he was bad.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, yeah, for Danny to get hurt like that, it's such a bummer, because he said, you know, I've never dealt with a major injury like this. And this year it was 60. I think he played like 62 games in the regular season. That's the fewest games he's played since he became a regular player in the NBA in 2011, 2012. So like, he's even in these, in these shortened seasons, he's still playing all of these games. So, you know, for a guy who, he went through a lot of stuff this year where he was dealing with nagging injuries all year, where his hamstring was screwed up. And he was in and out of the starting lineup because they went with Matisse for a little bit. by the time the playoffs came around, he was the healthiest he was all season. And he was proving to everybody that, hey, you know, I'm not the defender that I was in San Antonio, but I'm competent enough on that end of the floor that I can be playable in a play. Like, when it matters, you can trust me to play basketball. Like, yeah, don't put me on Trae Young. But besides that, like, I'm a huge part of this team. And when you have guys like Tyrese Maxey and James Harden, or those two guys, all right, well, I can make the threes off the ball. So for him to go down like that, yeah, personally, because he's such a good guy. And like you saw it, you know, he's on crutches shaking hands with people after the game. He's on crutches. He didn't have to do his exit interview yesterday. Like,
yeah.
Definition of a professional. So, I mean, good luck to Danny. I feel mostly just really bad for him. But the Sixers need Danny Green at $10 million. Like, he's like a competent basketball player. Now they have to completely start from scratch. And okay, yeah, they don't have to make a James Harden trade this year. So, you know, if they hit on one of these minimum signings or whatever, like you said, not a lot of room. They don't have to trade that guy away this year to be attached to a guy who doesn't want to play freaking basketball for you. But it's going to be hard to build out that depth. You know, Miami's, it was a joke how much better their fifth to ninth men were.
Yeah.
Even more. They're 11 men. And that comes from player development. That comes from, you know, hitting on, you know, undrafted free agents, those type of things. And the Sixers have a lot of work. And, you know, look, I think Daryl Morey might be pretty good at that.
It usually takes years to build that up.
To build it to championship level where that's like, that's making an impact in the playoffs. Because honestly, like what Daryl did this year, Niang and Drummond, those were good regular season signings to help you win those games. I don't think those guys were swinging playoff series in the way that Miami's depth really kind of helped. I mean, Jimmy was obviously a beast, but their depth just wore on the Sixers in this series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Gabe Vincent is a playable player because they signed him 3 years ago and spent 3 years developing. You don't really have 3 years to go find your next Gabe Vincent and hope that he can work
Max
his Struce way into
too.
Max Struce, what, I think 2 years they've had him in the quote-unquote program. It takes time to work those players up, and maybe, you know, maybe Paul Reed can take a step next year, maybe Charles Bassey.
And I think
certainly
they can.
I mean, Tyrese Maxey, you give the Sixers credit for, but they need way more playable depth for sure. And that's why, again, there's a part of me that when I take a step back from this monstrosity of a end of a playoff series, I can talk myself into, well, maybe now that James Harden has an offseason to really get back into his version of peak basketball shape and he's not rehabbing the hamstring, he can be better than he was this year. Maybe not what he was a couple years ago, but better, somewhere in the middle. Maybe you get enough depth and you don't completely fall off a cliff in the playoffs. That can help improve their chances. Joel Embiid doesn't have a broken face and a torn thumb. That'll improve their chances.
And by the way, I don't want to hear injury prone for him. Those are two freak injuries.
Freak injuries. 100%. I agree. If this was a foot or a knee or lower back, something like that.
If it was last year, like the meniscus. Yeah,
and
okay.
It's not even like I heard some people being like, oh, well, the Sixers have to figure out how to get him to the playoffs healthy. Well, these weren't like chronic use injuries. This was a freak elbow to the face. This was getting a finger caught in a jersey.
Yeah. Okay. So keep going. I interrupted you, but you talked about Maxey. You talked about Harden being better.
Yeah. If all of these things get better, I think the Sixers can be better, closer to a finals contending team. It's just, there's two things that I can't get out of my head, and it's the lack of competitive response, which again, that's going to come up again in the playoffs if they get deep enough. And the fact that there's just so much uncertainty. I go back to what I wrote when they acquired Harden, and it's, you know, Joel Embiid finally has a championship caliber running mate. We don't know that anymore. Not at this stage of his career. And that uncertainty doesn't mean it's not going to work out. It does mean that there's significantly more concern than I expect to have at this stage.
Yep. I think that's well put. And you mentioned like Paul Reed and even Doc, who was not going on the victory tour, said after the season, he's like, man, I think Paul Reed's going to help us next year. Like, I agree with that.
He sung Charles Bassey's praises, too, even though he doesn't play him. He sung his praises.
I agree with that. Like, I'm not even sure the Sixers need to get a backup center. I think you just split it between those two guys and they'll be fine.
Get me a wing who can dribble and defend and shoot. Yes, they need some two-way wings in the worst possible way.
Can you get at least one Otto Porter type signing this year? That's the key. You know, if you can get two of them, then I think you might actually really be in business. Because, again, I mentioned this earlier, Tyrese Maxey being this good is cool, man. Like, that's that's a big deal. And he's 21 years old, and you got Doc saying that the kid still wants to keep working. So we know he's going to reach whatever potential he's going to have. You know, and I think these playoffs were a perfect reminder that Tyrese Maxey, despite his 40-point scoring outbursts, his moments where he just is absolutely unstoppable, still needs to get better at consistently running the offense, taking over from game to game. And look, some of that is that he's playing with James Harden, and there is a little bit of a give and take there. But the fact that he consistently showed that he has those flashes, that he was consistently inconsistent with the highs, just reaching such a great level, that's awesome, man. Like, that's a huge deal. That is a bigger win than the Sixers have had from an individual standpoint since, like, I guess Embiid, you know, since Embiid playing this well. And, you know, Embiid's not getting any worse at basketball, I don't think. I think it's fair to say he's, you know, he talked about that he's going to unlock some other levels, and it just sucks. You would hope he would be healthy. So basically what I'm saying is, when you do step back from this, I am a little more positive about this group moving forward, but the Harden part of this is just such, it's like you said, it's such a question mark, and his performance in that last game just left such a bad taste in your mouth. Like, the lack of competitive fire in Game 6 of the playoffs. We wait all season for this, and to go out like that is just, there's no getting around it. We sound like the sports radio host at 6 o'clock. Like, does this guy care? Honestly, does he care?
Yeah. And it's. And even if you would have been aggressive, like, I'm not sure I had much confidence in it. Like, yeah, maybe he has a game where the step backs are working, like Game 4, but I'm not sure I have a ton of confidence in him creating great shots at this stage. He has to get himself into the best basketball shape of his life to overcome aging and the hamstring, and I just don't have a ton of confidence in that outlook.
Is he gonna do that on when the Sixers are offering him, I don't know, $20 million a year, $30 million a year, something like that? Like, they're not offering him a max.
If there's one benefit to the last couple of months, it's that max has to be off the table. There's no way. There's just no way.
No.
There's no way. No, there's no team out there that's going to offer him even $35, $40 million a year. It's just not happening.
And, you know, who knows? Maybe he opts in and, you know, from the Sixers standpoint, okay, yeah, that means he could walk the next year, but at least if he's trying to play for another contract, he would theoretically be playing hard and in basketball shape. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to be talking a lot about James Harden, and unfortunately, it's not going to be that positive. What did what'd you make of Maury and Doc yesterday?
Well, I think first thing I made of that, we asked a lot of questions about, you know, basically whether this was the version of James Harden he was expecting. He seemed like he was a little dodging that one a little bit. Like,
oh, yeah.
We like James a lot. Yada, yada, yada. He brings a lot to the table.
We got to unlock him.
Yeah. But, I think what most people are going to take away is the fact that Daryl Morey came out and said, yes, Doc Rivers will be the coach next year. I expected Doc to be back, if I'm being honest. This wasn't as indefensible. The way they played was indefensible, but the loss itself wasn't indefensible like last year's.
I haven't seen the footage. Apparently, Doc was like in the huddle. They caught him mic'd up, like, play hard, fight for this. And there's nothing he can do on that.
So I expected him to be back. I had a lot of people saying, like, well, was Daryl going to say anything else when Doc was sitting right next to him? No, he wasn't going to say anything else. But the key there is that Doc was sitting right next to him.
If you think back to
the Lakers, like, the Lakers had leaked that they were moving on before the freaking press conference was even over after the final game of the season.
Yeah.
If the Sixers were going to make a change, they wouldn't have had Doc Rivers come up and be part of that press conference. So look, is there a chance that maybe Doc Rivers will be like, I want to go to LA, and the Sixers will be like, sure, go ahead? I guess theoretically that could be possible. Who knows whether or not Doc is interested in that and whether or not the Sixers would let him pursue that. But certainly, I don't think the Sixers are going to come out here, and in a week, you're going to get a Woj bomb saying that the Sixers, you know, fired Doc Rivers. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to be the coach next year.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a healthy degree of skepticism, I would say, around the league until that Lakers job is filled.
The Lakers
by somebody else.
Does seem like the one potential hiccup for sure.
Yeah, there's no other job. It's the Lakers is the one that has been linked to Doc for a lot of time. But yeah, the fact that they were sitting next to each other, they didn't have to do that. They could have done individual press conferences. So yeah, it's look, I don't think this series was Doc's fault. I mean, you could say, you know, is the message getting through? But I think after a loss, you can find so many ways to finagle the loss on the coach where I think you got a lot of quote tweets for this one where he was like, what I took from this is we were not as good as the Miami Heat. And I agree. I agree with him. And I agree with him.
I don't think that's what a coach should say because it sounds like basically him saying, I couldn't have done anything. And that's just not the attitude you sort of want from your coach.
Well,
but I don't think he was wrong either.
Yeah, it's not the greatest thing. But again, this is Doc where he doesn't always say the right thing. And I will say, like, the Doc and Embiid, everybody was, you know, basketball Twitter, everybody was so fired up for their post-game press conferences to the point where Embiid drops like a little like, yeah, Harden's more of a playmaker than he's not the Houston guy anymore.
He's not Houston.
So they take that little part of a longer answer and they run with that. And, you know, like what you just did with Doc, where I think both of those guys were on their best behavior for the most part. They did not want this to be a repeat of last year where it was like a complete shitstorm. And also, I think the nature of the loss was kind of like that, too, where, you know, when you just get outworked, I mean, fuck it, you know, like whatever. We lost, you know, it's not we passed up on a dunk at the end of the game. So, yeah, it's I think there's a very good chance Doc is back, obviously, with what Daryl said. They're not firing him.
And look, I would love to sit here and say that they are one upgrade at coach.
They're not.
Away from being a championship team. And do I think Doc is the answer? No, I'm not convinced Doc is the answer. But there's a lot more wrong with this team than just Doc. And a lot of that's going to come down to Daryl Morey and how quickly he can fix the rest of the pieces on the roster. A lot of that's going to come down to James Harden and whether or not he can make himself into being an actual difference maker deep into the playoffs. But this team has a lot of question marks and a lot of people that need to have career years until you get to the point where Doc is the actual thing holding them back. And again, I'm not convinced Doc is the answer. There's just a lot of questions you have to answer before that really comes into play.
Yeah. I also, you mentioned Morey's answers about Harden of, hey, you know, we got to get him a full training camp. We got to, you know, give him time, a full season, you know. And look, the off season, I think, is the big hope. Like, you just hope that guy can get in shape, rest whatever's dealing with his hamstring, and get back to, like you said, you know, the middle ground between Houston Harden and this Harden.
Just what you saw with the Nets last year before he got injured. That's what you need.
You know what also sucks about this? Harden, in last season's playoff series, he was playing with a completely busted hamstring.
Yeah.
And he didn't have anything, but it was the first time in a long time everybody said, well, hey, look, he really gave it a go. Like, he really just, he couldn't move, but he, good for him. Like, he's playing 40 minutes a game for the Nets. So, good for the, of course, the Sixers always get the worst version where he's not that banged up now. He actually can move a little bit, and he just barfs on the floor. It's really bad. But anyway, Morey talks about, you know, all of these contextual reasons of, oh, you know, we get the offense, we get some new players around him, all of these different things. And I'm just sitting there thinking, you know better than anybody. When he's good, he's the context. It doesn't really matter what you put around him. So he's got to get back to a much higher level than he played at.
I would love to, you know, not that Daryl would ever be truthful about this either in public or in private to us. I would love to know if he got what he was expecting from Harden. If he just missed how much he had lost in his first step in his burst, or if he thought that Joel Embiid could help hide the fact that Harden had taken that big of a step back. I would love to know what he was truly expecting, because that was not it. That was not what I think anyone was hoping for when they made that trade. And again, I still like, there's aspects of Harden's game I like quite a bit, mostly as it relates to his passing, but they needed more. They just need way more.
I mean, the highs were good. He had 17 assists in a closeout game. He was awesome.
Yeah.
He, you know, he had 31 points making all those step backs, which again, I think were fluky and a little bit lucky, but he did that in the fourth quarter of a key playoff game. You know, I don't think CJ McCollum could have done that. I don't really think that some of these players that people are...
No, I'm not pining for CJ for sure.
Saying, well, actually, you could have had these guys. I don't think Seth Curry could have done that. I don't think, you know, that the combination of Drummond. I think the highs were still there, but man, the lows and what we saw were just bad.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hopefully this is the low point of our offseason and we can get back to being slightly more positive, or at least not quite as negative, because that was not a super fun podcast to do.
No.
And then again, it was not a super fun couple of games to watch either.
Well, okay, so let's end it on a positive note, because I think it gets lost in the pursuit of a championship. It gets lost in, you know, the disappointment of losing. That was an epic season from one Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Epic. Like, round of applause, unbelievable, pleasure to watch, pleasure to follow the entire year. And, you know, we'll see how... The worst part is, after losses, I keep hearing, oh, you know, he's going to ask for a trade soon, and his body's breaking down to the point, or whatever. Guys, I don't know. He just played at the, like, a literal MVP level for two straight years. Yeah, I think it's a bummer that the Sixers wasted those seasons, but... I don't know. Can there be some appreciation for how good this guy is, and the fact that you're living in the middle of, I don't know, like an epic Philadelphia athlete? Epic.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
No, if you went through and ranked the top players that this franchise has drafted in its very long and relatively storied history, he's very close to the top. And we can debate Barkley and Iverson. I think there's more of a debate than some people would give that credit for. But then you have to go back to a guy who was taken with the territorial draft. You have to go back so far. I mean, there are just not very many people who have had a better career that were homegrown and brought in through the organization. And look, that's always given me some concern that they're going to waste it, because people are, oh, you know, trade Embiid while you can, blah, blah, blah. Process wasn't worth it. It is exceptionally difficult to get a guy who can play at an MVP level multiple years running. And the risk of, and the concern of wasting that is always, just because it's so difficult to get that, is always at the top of my mind. But you still have to take a step back and say, dude, you've got one of the two or three best players in the world. Like, you still have a chance. Which is why it goes back to how we sort of started this podcast off. The depressing thing is, you just don't know what you have around him. And through all of the GMs and all of the coaching changes and all of this, now, you know, it used to be you had Simmons and Embiid as a base and you shuffled in the two or three remaining starters and all the bench every year, which it seemed like you did shuffle them almost every year. Well, now you shuffled the supporting star around him and you still just don't know what you have. They have a monster of an offseason coming up. to address a lot of their shortcomings as a team and as a roster around him. You would hope there would be a little more certainty around that, but this is Philadelphia, and bad things happen in Philadelphia, I guess. I don't know.
It's a good way to end it. Yeah, and bad things happen, and the bearer of bad news is Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, no shit. No shit.
First time we mentioned him, but yeah,
he was fucking fantastic. Incredible. Incredible performance.
He's 33 years old, and he's, unlike Harden, I'm not worried about his effort level in playoff games. And,
nope.
You know, we were worried about how he was going to age. We were worried about that contract. Well,
yeah, well
I'm worried about his next contract that he just signed. That's that's a little crazy. Like, he's going to be 37 by the end of it. I'm not worried about Jimmy right now, though. He was excellent, and he let the Sixers know about it. So that's
he did.
Yeah,
he did.
Well, the good news is they signed Horford, who worked out really well. And by the way, Horford,
pretty good player,
who completely submarined their franchise. Oh yeah, now that he's back in Boston, he's good again, and he's playing in an epic playoff series. All right.
I mean, that was the definition of just a bad fit. Like, good player. Quite frankly,
I don't want to get it.
We don't need to rehash the Al Horford situation. Depressing enough.
Bad fit. He was dogging it a little bit. I'll just say that. Okay, let's keep going.
Well, I don't know if I have too much to add. I feel like I've been. You got anything else?
Yep, we had to get through it. So
we'll have plenty of time to talk here in the weeks and months ahead, because the off season once again is a little longer than we all would have hoped for it to be. But thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.